Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the premier radio networks, including 150 of the best stations in the U.S., on Sunday, June 5th, 2011. This is episode 776. Enjoy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk tech. Yes, the computer and the internet and the cell phone and the camcorder and the MP3 player and the home theater and all that jazz and rigmarole. That's what I'm here to talk about right now at 8888 Ask Leo. If you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you want to talk about something you just saw on the TV, on a home shopping network, should I buy that? You ask me, I'll tell you. 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere. I know I said that fast, but I'll tell you, if you can't remember it, you could just go to the website. This is all you have to remember, really, is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com, that's the website. We've got the show notes there for every show. This is episode 776 in a continuing series answering the questions you have about technology. We're going to talk a little bit about, there was Windows 8 announcement this last week, and then next week, Apple's going to talk about their new operating system, Lion. I'm not lying. In fact, they put out a press release, which never happens. They said, yes, not only will Steve Jobs be speaking on Monday at the Worldwide Developers Conference, it's Apple's last kind of conference that they actually run and hold. They used to do Macworld Expo and CES and Comdex. Oh, no, they just do one thing a year, WWDC. So they're going to jam it full of all sorts of stuff. Steve will talk about OS X Lion, which probably won't be out, you know, this week. It'll probably be out still in September, I would guess, in the fall. They'll talk about the next version of the iPhone and iPad operating system, iOS, iOS 5. And I expect some interesting things there. We don't know. We don't have a lot of clues as to what iOS 5 will hold. And Apple will talk about something they call iCloud. There have been lots of rumors about iCloud flying, but finally the Apple's admitted it. Yeah, we're doing iCloud. We'll tell you everything on Monday. So, what could that be? Well, probably a replacement for MobileMe, which has been, frankly, a little disappointing. It's expensive. It's $100 a year, and it doesn't do as many things as a lot of other services out there do, including when you talk about music, Amazon's cloud service and Google's cloud service. iTunes is looking a little old compared to those now. You can't store your music in the cloud on the internet and play it back. Apple has apparently done deals with all four of the major record labels, which sounds to me, in fact, they say hundreds of millions of dollars spent. Sounds to me like Apple's iCloud will include some sort of music storage. You know what I'd like? And because I'd like it, I don't think it's going to happen. What I'd like is if Apple would let us, I don't know, just wave our CD at the computer and would say, yeah, I got that. You don't have to upload it. I got it. I'll take care of that. And your whole collection would be up there. You know, they could do that in iTunes. iTunes, you just check. What do you got? Okay, it's all there. Because you know what you have to do with Google and Amazon? You have to upload the songs. It's because the music industry is very funny about piracy. They're not satisfied that you could just say, yeah, look, I can prove it. I have it. See, it's on the computer. Or, yeah, I have this CD. Let me put it in the disk and see, I got it. I can prove it. See that? And no, they'd say, no, you have to upload it. There've been numerous court cases over this. So maybe with Apple paying some royalties, maybe Apple, this is what I suspect, and it may not happen right away, but I suspect iCloud will include a lot of things. Perhaps online storage for iPad files, maybe some way of kind of common way of storing files on your Mac and your iPad and your iPhone so you can access them all. That'd be nice. Things like, you know, Dropbox already does that. Be nice if they did that. Be really nice if they, you know, stored your music. I think this is what they're going to do. They're going to say, if you buy a song on iTunes, we'll store it for you, just like Amazon does. If you buy it, if it's an iTunes song, all right, we'll store it for you. And you can download it, you know, a few times, and you can play it from any iPhone or iPad, maybe from your Mac too, from iTunes. I think that's about it. It may come, you know, it's basically like what Amazon did. It may come to pass that they offer some more services down the road. That's what the rumor is. But right now, I think that's all you're going to see. Now, the question is, are they going to charge $100 a year for this? Well, I've never seen Apple cut prices ever. Can you remember a single time Apple has cut prices? They don't lower prices. They give you more for your money, but they don't. I've never seen them lower prices. So seems unlikely that they. Well, some people say, oh no, this will be free. Maybe it'll be free. Maybe it'll be $29.99. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Baba in our chat room. He's saying, well, Snow Leopard was a lot cheaper. You're right. They did lower the price for Snow Leopard. It used to be $129 to get an app operating system upgrade, and now it's this time it was only $30. Maybe it's possible. There's one. Can you think of another one? Hey, the MacBook Air. All right, you're right. But that's kind of a. That was kind of a up. All right, maybe they will. Maybe iCloud will be $30 or free. Or free for now. You know, that's what Google and Amazon kind of do. Actually, Google's free for now. Amazon is kind of free, if sort of free. 5 gigs free and 20 gigs if you buy a song on the Amazon store. We'll see. Maybe they'll have free service and paid service. We'll see. We'll find out tomorrow. Meanwhile, Microsoft, I commend Microsoft. Microsoft said, we better, we're kind of falling behind here. Maybe we better do something with the next version of Windows. And they made it look a lot like the Windows Phone. It's going to be a touch interface, and it's got a little sliding tiles like the Windows Phone does. Yeah, on your desktop. Underneath, you can slide it over. You can slide it over, and underneath will be Windows, 7, something like Windows 7. But what you'll see initially will be just these slidey tiles, and you tap stuff. Apple has already said, we don't want to do that on the desktop because we think it's too. People will be reaching out their arms, and their arms will get tired. Microsoft says, no, you can still use a mouse and a keyboard, but I have to ask, what's the point of a touch screen if you're using your mouse and your keyboard? I don't know if that's an improvement. I think the jury's still out on this one. I know a lot of Windows people are really excited, saying, finally, Microsoft, yeah, finally. But I have to say, you got to look at these companies and really, at Google with Android and Microsoft with Windows 8 and Windows Phone 7 and say, boy, they're just kind of trying to copy Apple. And meanwhile, Apple with Lion... I think they're not going to go that far. I don't think they're going to turn Lion into a touch-based operating system. I think that's why Apple has two operating systems. They have a touch operating system, iOS. They're going to update that, and there may be some very interesting new features in that. But I don't see them updating. We know kind of what they're doing with Lion because they've been putting out developer releases. Lion's going to have some interesting features. One of the features that's kind of like what Microsoft's doing is applications will be allowed to take over the screen, just go full screen, boom. And I guess that's because we're getting used to that now with iPad, right? When you run an app on iPad, it just takes over. In fact, you can't have multiple apps running on the iPad, really. You have to go from one to the other. But you don't have like one little window and another little window, do you? The iPad just uses it, whatever's running uses up the screen. We're in a very interesting time. I think that one of the things I've been saying for the last couple of years is you're not going to see a lot of innovation. Operating systems are mature. They kind of know what they're doing now. There's not a lot of places they can go. All the innovation is going to happen in the portable space with phones and tablets. Maybe Microsoft's making some big strides, some big changes for its desktop operating system. Tomorrow we'll find out what Apple's up to. All right, you're right. An iPhone. They lowered the price of the iPhone. I take it back. Apple has lowered prices. They have. I admit it. They have. Maybe they will for iCloud. Maybe they will. Maybe iCloud will have, like, most of these services, like Dropbox, a free component where you get a certain amount of storage for free. And then if you want more, you pay for it. Maybe that's how they do it. We'll find out. If you want to join the chat room yelling and screaming at me and telling me that I've got it all wrong, you can. It's easy to do. Just go to techguylabs.com. You'll find the phone number there, 8888-ASK-LEO. We go to the phones next. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte,
the tech guy.
8888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free inside the U.S. But, you know, a great number of people listen to the show outside the U.S. I don't, you know, thanks to the internet. What a concept. So if you're listening outside the U.S., you can still call in. We love getting calls from all over the world. All you have to do is use Skype out. And Skype out will... make a call free to a toll-free number in the U.S. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. Let's go to Culver City for our first call of the day. Gene is on the line. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Leo. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I hired a web designer about 5 years ago to build a website. I used photos.
How many years ago?
About five.
Okay.
And it was great. I was very...
Was the web around 5 years ago?
Repeat?
I'm sorry. I'm just joking. Was the web around 5 years ago? In web years, 5 years is like a century.
Yes. Well, he did a great job a century
Good.
Ago.
Yes.
I was very satisfied.
Yes.
And...
I hear a butt coming.
Yes. A year ago, I got a bill from Getty Images for $875.
Wow. They're pictures.
Yeah. And
yeah.
I was flabbergasted. So I called him. He says, disregard it. He says that they buy things up after people use them and then bill you for them.
Well, that's interesting.
That was his.
So his claim is that he used. Now, the problem with that I have with that is.
Yes.
He used it. But does he have any evidence that he used it with permission?
No, I asked him, and he said that he's got a whole bunch of stuff, miscellaneous receipts.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. See, here's the problem. If that image were available to be used freely, and it's unlikely, but let's say, you know, when I put images up on my on Flickr, for instance, I put a license on it. So here's the image, and on the license on the right, it says... how you can use it. It says that you may use this for attribution, non-commercial share alike. In other words, for non-commercial use. It's interesting because I see Flickr also has a link. Want to license your photos through Getty Images. So I could, I guess, go to Getty and say, here, I'd like you to start selling this for me.
Yeah.
But what he needs, and maybe you could write a letter to Getty and say, look, this image was... used prior to your acquiring it. The problem is, as soon as they acquired it, they changed the license.
Apparently, it was at least 4 years after it was posted on my website that they came after me.
Right.
Yes.
Images. People in the Flickrverse request to license your images. Allow getting to invite my photos. Please no link. No thanks. I don't want to. So this is something that's very easy to do on Flickr. So you know what? Maybe I'm going to give your webmaster, the designer, some credit here because he might actually, it sounds like maybe this is the case where he went to Flickr. He found an image like mine that says you can use this. It's very unlikely that it said you could. Is your site commercial?
It's my business.
Yes. So that's commercial. You make money on it.
Yes.
Yeah. So that makes it a little trickier. So you're making money on it. He would have to be using a picture that said, you can use this in any case, anytime, anywhere, without any credit or permission. That's rare. And he furthermore would have to, you know, have some evidence of that.
Yeah.
And then furthermore, as soon as Getty acquired it, and I presume that they did that and changed the license, then I don't know. I guess it's incumbent on you to license it from them. Unless you have permission in perpetuity from the
their letter. I got it off of there.
Good. But that doesn't matter because they want retroactive.
Yes. And they
I would write him a nice letter. I mean, you know, it's only $800, which means it's certainly not worth hiring a lawyer because it'll cost you more in 2 hours than that.
Yeah.
You could. I mean, I'm not a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So this is in the province of the lawyer. I think that's probably what happened, which was let's assume that your web designer. I think your web designer is a little out of line, to be honest. But let's say he'd need to show this to you. He got a letter from the creator of the photograph saying, yeah, you can use this forever. No problem. That'd let you off the hook. Otherwise, you can write a letter to Getty and say what happened. They might either reduce the amount or let you off the hook. You could take the designer to small claims courts, a small enough amount that you could try to get that money out of the designer. I mean, I think this is shame on Getty.
Uh-huh.
I think if they license a photograph, then it's incumbent on them to tell the people who are using that photograph, hey, we changed the rules.
Yeah.
But I think the real problem is unless your web designer can show that you had the rights to use that, You're kind of out of luck. Maybe this letter is the warning from Getty. Hey, by the way, give us $874.
Okay, because that was a year
ago.
Another letter.
I think the web designer saying to you, ignore it, is not good advice.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not a lawyer either, and I'm not a lawyer. I think you could probably go to the, you know, sue the web designer in small claims court. I don't think it's worth it for that kind of money, but you could. It's a small enough amount that you can go to small claims court. That means you don't need a lawyer. But I think that, you know, maybe you should call Bill Handel, get some legal advice on this, because I'm not a lawyer, and that's really the issue. The rules in general are you can't just use an image that somebody else created.
I can understand that, yes, and that.
Unless, you know, the designer bought, you know, the problem is you didn't know. And how would you know?
Right.
Many designers buy images, collections of images that can be used royalty free.
Yes.
And I think it's a reasonable presumption. This is a good lesson, by the way, for anybody who's getting designs done. If you see an image in there, make sure that they either have the license to that or it was a royalty free image or they somehow have, you know, talked to the creator of it. Because reasonably, the person who took the picture says, well, wait a minute, you just used that picture on your website. It'd be one thing if it wasn't a business, but it's a business.
Uh-huh.
You know, think of the other side of it. There's what is the image of? Is it of a person?
It's of a field with flowers.
So whoever took that picture has been selling it as stock photography, maybe not when your designer used it 5 years ago, but ever since. At some point, they changed that.
Yeah.
And Getty, $874 actually isn't that much for 5 years use, believe it or not. I know it's a lot for you, especially unexpectedly. But I don't know what your recourse is. It's not enough money to say, let me go consult an attorney.
Huh.
I would say what I would do is write a letter to Getty and say, what can I do here?
Uh-huh.
If you could find out whose image it was, you could write to them and say, hey, did you offer this image license free, royalty free 5 years ago? Could you write me a letter that says that? I think you're kind of out of luck otherwise. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Carbonite.com. Backup done right. Online, automatic, and affordable. I want you to try it today. Absolutely free. Go to Carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo, as the offer code. You can try it for 2 weeks if you decide to buy 2 months free when you use my name, Leo. Carbonite. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right with Carbonite. Home Theater Time, Scott Wilkinson is here. He's my personal home theater guru. Editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine, ultimateavmag.com, and a columnist at Home Theater Magazine. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's good. Welcome. I haven't told you this, but next week, can you do the show?
Oh, darn. I think I'm busy. Oh, no.
It would be great if you could.
Of course I can. I'm so happy.
I did this last year, and it was really fun. It's something called Foo Camp.
You know, you've mentioned that, and I don't know what the heck it is.
Yeah, Foo Camp. Foo stands for Friends of O'Reilly. O'Reilly publishes those tech books. They're just up the road a bit in Sebastopol.
Oh, and, nice place.
And they have a camp every year of about 400 or 500 interesting people. It's invitation only. You have to be somebody that O'Reilly thinks of as a friend and somebody who has something to offer, and they all get together. It was the first unconference, so we all just get together. We camp out on the lawn there at O'Reilly, and then anybody who wants to do a seminar can. Wow. So there's all these interesting people, interesting seminars, and I just love doing it. But unfortunately, it's on the weekend. See, most people, it turns out, I didn't know this, most people have Saturday and Sunday off.
Yeah, what a concept.
Yeah, wow. So, you know, I keep missing things because they do it on the weekends. So this time I'm going to take the weekend off, and but I know people love having you on. You filled in for me when I was on the cruise in February, so thank you.
I'm so happy to do it, and that camp sounds really great.
It is.
You actually have like tent cabins in the woods and that kind of stuff?
No, it's actually on the lawn of the O'Reilly offices, and you bring your own tent.
Oh, I accept. Okay.
Or some people sleep in the offices. I bring a tent.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then they have a little campfire. It's kind of, and Sebastopol's a little rural, so it's not.
Wow. I hope somebody brings a guitar. You know, you can
they
sing
bring
Kumbaya,
guitars,
that kind of stuff.
And because it's like kind of geeky people, they don't just bring guitars. Last year they brought a Van de Graaff generator and fried marshmallows with it. That was cool. and when I say fry, I mean fried, not toasted, fried.
Oh, no.
I started to shoot
in about a millisecond.
Yeah. Because it's like a million volts. I started to shoot it with my iPhone and they said, don't get so close, because apparently the spark would jump off from the generator to my iPhone.
Oh, man.
Frying me.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Or at least the phone. So they said, you know, maybe not so close. So it's fun. It's an adventure.
Well,
you never know what's going to happen.
That just sounds great. I envy you that, but I'm very happy to fill in for you on Sunday. I'm going to go over to the studio here in LA. And,
thank you.
Kyle's going to be the board op. I'm really sad that Luis is leaving, but...
Who's Luis?
Oh, soon they forget.
Luis who? No, I haven't said anything yet, but this is Luis Oliveira's last day with us. He's our wonderful board op, has been for... How many years have you been here, Luis? Four? Three? 4.5 years working for Premier Radio Networks. And he's going back to college, which is a good thing. I encourage
That's
all.
That's a very good thing.
He's
yes,
only
absolutely.
Like 18. I don't, you know, he started when he was 12. So I think it's about time he got an education. This is not a living for any human. So thank you, Luis, for doing such a great job. Yeah, you won't see Luis. You'll see Kyle Benham. But
see Kyle. Kyle's fine. He's a great guy and does great music.
But, he's okay.
He's okay, I guess.
He's no Luis. Anyway, enough of that. Let's talk home theater.
Enough of that. Yes, I heard the call yesterday. Somebody actually went down to the show, THE show.
Thanks to your plug.
Thanks to my plug. And he discovered, as I wish I had made more of a point of, that it's typically a very high-end product that they're showing down there.
Yeah.
You know, $100,000 speakers, $20,000 speakers, and so on. And they're in a hotel room, which he pointed out, you know, you get 5 or 10 people in a hotel room.
It's a lot of
and
people.
It gets pretty hot and smelly in
he
there.
He was in the mood for a kind of a mid-range home theater audio system. And I steered him towards the Onkyo home theater in a box, which probably wasn't there. He said the Rogers guys sounded really good, but I didn't ask him. But I bet those
were pretty
expensive.
Didn't get into the Rogers Sound Lab room, unfortunately. And your advice was very good. You know, to get a home theater in a box, and the Onkyo is an excellent choice. The one thing the Onkyo systems typically don't have is a built-in Blu-ray player.
And I think I gathered from him he already had that part.
If he already had a Blu-ray player, then the Onkyo is a perfect system for him.
Yeah, home theater box means different things. I mean, in the old days, it meant a Blu-ray player, which had a built-in amplifier for the 5.1 surround. But nowadays, it may or may not include a Blu-ray player. It may just be an amp.
In most cases, it does. Yeah. But in the case of the Onkyo, it doesn't. Now, I wanted to point out that at the show, which is still going on today, if anybody wants to hop over to Newport Beach, the Orange County Airport Hilton, there's one room where they have a very modestly priced system that is pretty good. It's not a home theater in a box. It's the speaker system is from a company called Golden Ears.
Well, that's got to be good.
It's got to be good. Well, the guy behind Golden Ear is a guy named Sandy Gross, and he's actually been a guest on my podcast.
Home Theater Geeks, Mondays, 1:30 Pacific on Twit. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for that. anyway, he's a legendary speaker designer. He started Polk Audio. Oh. He started Definitive Technology. These are very, very good speaker brands. And then he's off on his next project, which is Golden Ear. And his goal is to make really high quality, good sounding speakers that are very affordable. And so in this room at the THE show, is this Golden Ear system called the SuperSat 3, I believe. It's a tiny little satellite speaker, five of them arrayed around the room with a little 8-inch subwoofer or so. I don't remember what the price on that is. It's probably in the $1,000 range with an Onkyo receiver. We were talking about Onkyo.
So that's the whole thing for $1,000.
Yeah, roughly.
When we say mid-range, is that the price we're talking about for a home theater in the box is $1,000?
Yeah. I would say that's a good price to expect to pay for a reasonable home theater in a box.
You once told me that if you should spend as much as you spend on the TV on the audio? Is that what you said?
Well, that is one way to look at it.
So
yes.
That's like $3,000. $1,000, I'm getting, what am I getting, a rinky-dink, tinny-sounding?
No. For one thing, TVs these days, yes, you can spend $3,000 on a TV easily, but you don't have to. You can get a pretty good TV these days for, I'd say, $1,500 to $2,000. So
that's true. They've gotten much less expensive.
They've gotten much less expensive. So if you spend that kind of money, say between $1,000 and $2,000 on an audio system, it's going to be okay. It can be okay. Spending that kind of money doesn't guarantee you're going to get a good system, just like spending $20,000 on an audio doesn't necessarily guarantee you're going to get a great sounding audio.
On the other hand, if you spend $20,000 and you don't, you feel much worse than you've only spent $1,000.
Or you convince yourself that it really sounds great.
Yeah. Wow, this is good. That's why you spend $20,000.
Exactly. Yeah. This is my theory about super expensive cables. You know, people who spend $20,000 on a pair of speaker cables, it's got to sound better than Zipcord.
It's a placebo effect.
Yeah, exactly.
Scott is editor-in-chief at the Ultimate AV Magazine, and he, good news, he's going to be here for 3 hours next week.
3 hours on Sunday. Can't wait. It's going to be great.
You can get him some questions ahead of time if you want. Scott@techguylabs.com. You can also visit his Q&A column on the Home Theater Magazine, hometheatermag.com.
And Ultimate AV Mag as well.
Poll this week?
I do have a poll this week. You might not like it that much. It's, do you own a 3D TV?
No, I think it's a good question. I talked yesterday about a New York Times article saying that the Hollywood was getting a little disappointed by box office. Fewer than half of the tickets sold for Pirates were for 3D.
That's very interesting.
Fewer than,
considering that it was really hyped for 3D.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
could we be reaching the end?
Could be. We'll find out next week. Scott Wilkinson, thanks. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yes, it's the end of an era. Luis Oliveira heading off into the sunset, getting his education. What are you going to study, Luis? He's been going to school for the past 3 years. It's about time. So mechanical engineering, this will be you'll focus full time so you can get it over with. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. The higher level classes, you got to spend more brain power on. He can't waste any gray cells on this show. No more of that. You need all of them for the mechanical engineering. He wants to work at JPL. Isn't that cool? That's really cool. Well, good luck, Luis. It's really it's been so much fun working with you. Luis is my right-hand man in the studio. I got to say that. Gino Salvati is off today, right? It's Aaron on the phones. And we'll get back to the phones right now with Bruce in Rhode Island. My old buddy. Hey, Bruce.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I am great. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Thank you so much. Before I get to my question, I have to thank you because I was looking for an app. I had a need, and it wasn't on the iTunes store. And because of your encouragement with other people, I decided to design it myself. And now I have it on the iTunes store.
You're kidding. Well,
no,
that was fast.
Tens of dollars. So
now, did you hire a programmer?
What happened was I'm a professional magician, and I needed something. And so I found somebody who worked with me, and I did the design, and he did the programming, and we had a ball. And in 4 weeks, we put together this app, and it's selling very well, and people are thrilled with it. Entertainers love it. So thank you.
Well, what's the name of it? Let's give it a plug.
So I can make 20s of dollars, right?
20s? Well, I wouldn't even count on that. 11s of dollars.
11s of dollars. Okay. It's called Magic Gig Slips.
Magic Gig Slips. And it's for keeping track of your gigs?
Well, when somebody calls for a show, you write out a show slip with all the information. So on my iPad now, I can write the information, and with one click of a button, it sends out the contract to the person. It sends out a copy of the slip to me. It sends out, it gives me map directions on how to get to the show.
That is so cool.
Oh,
now it's very specialized. So you're right. You're probably not going to, now I see it's got great reviews. But it's so specialized. I don't know if you're going to sell millions of these.
No.
On the other hand, you solved a problem for yourself, and this is it's very interesting. In the old days, I remember talking to computer whiz folks who would say, oh, well, even today they say this, in my day, if you needed a program, you'd write it yourself. Now, kids today, they're so spoiled, they use all this out of the, canned software. This looks really cool, Bruce, I got to say, very impressive. A simple app, but it gets the job done.
Yeah, and I wrote it for magicians, but now bands are using it, and I'm getting all sorts of great letters from it. So I'm really happy. Thanks for your
Because I think this is one issue, by the way, that I think people, there's how many 400,000, 500,000 apps now. How do you discovery is an issue? Even if you were a magician, how would you know this existed?
Yeah, well,
you're not going to search for magic gigs.
No, but one of the keywords is magic, and hopefully they stumble across it, but people are finding it, and I'm really, really excited.
Isn't that neat?
So I've got two more apps that I'm working on, so I'm really happy.
Fantastic. Well done, Bruce. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Question for you now.
Yes, sir.
My iPad, which I absolutely love. I hardly use my laptop anymore because the iPad does everything I need.
Now, I want to highlight that because we get a lot of calls. We got a call yesterday from a 70-year-old guy who really wanted a Windows computer. And, consider an iPad, folks. If all he wanted to do is email and surfing, it's perfect for it. Why buy something much more complex when really that's all you need?
Write columns for a magazine on this thing. I do everything on my iPad. I only use my laptop to sync it. That's it.
Yeah.
So my question is, sometimes on websites, when I download a PDF or a file or a picture or whatever, it goes to the iPad, but I don't know where it goes.
Yeah, this is an issue, I have to say. The problem is you're a computer user, so you expect a file system, and something like Explorer or the Finder, some way of browsing the file system. And the iPad doesn't do that. That's one of the ways it makes things simpler. Each app can have its own files. When you sync it up to iTunes, if the app says so, you can look in iTunes and go to the Apps tab in iTunes, and you can see files associated with that app so that you can copy them off. But really, it's not designed for creating a file, having it on the file system, saying, there's the file, let's open it with this, let's open it with that. It's not designed to do that. Now, if it's PDFs, I would suggest a program called Goodreader.
Right.
That's a really great PDF reader. And anything that can download a PDF, well, then you'll be able to send it to Goodreader.
Oh, I see. Directly to Goodreader.
Yeah. And that's kind of how you have to do it on the iPad. You can't just... say, oh, there's a file on here. I want to open it with any arbitrary program. You have to open it with, you know, the program that created it or a program that, you know, it knows about. But you can't, there's no file system. I mean, there is, obviously, but.
So if the file now, I've downloaded it and it's on there and I have Goodreader, will Goodreader look for it?
No, what you'll have to do is you'll see it in Safari. So you download it in Safari, and then you will say open with Goodreader.
I gotcha. Okay.
It's a $5 program, just like yours. And it is, there are lots of programs that do this, but this is, I think, the best one for reading PDFs. It reads other file formats as well.
Right.
But not all file formats. Part of this is security as well, you know. I mean, one of the things that gets people in trouble on computers is downloading arbitrary programs and files and messing with them. That's how malware gets on your system. So this is a security thing as well as a complexity thing. That's the problem with the iPad. We know it's a computer. There's a CPU, there's memory, there's even storage and a file system, but it's hidden from the user. The whole point of the iPad is the user sees this simple, benign interface. And doesn't have to think about files. What is a file? I don't know. You don't need to know. You know, and I have to say, there are many users for whom that is fine. I look at my wife. I gave my, you know, my wife has a laptop. And she wanted to do email. And, you know, every once in a while, I have to go to her computer and close Windows. Because she doesn't understand that there's windows that are open. And then when I get to the, I did this once for her. And I closed all the windows, shut down all the programs. They'd all been running. She never closes a program. Everything just, we open it, it's still running. And then I got to it, and there's the desktop. She said, what's that? I said, well, that's what's behind all those windows. That's your, well, I never saw that before. No, because you, so then she started using the iPad, and she's much happier because the iPad, there is no desktop. There are no icons on the desktop. There are no windows. You run a program. When you're done with it, you run a different program. It makes much more sense to her, and a lot of the complexity that can confuse and get her in trouble is gone. You only have problems when you're a computer user and you go to the iPad, and then you go, well, where's my desktop? My wife has never in her life said, where's my desktop? She doesn't even, she said, what's that? And I think, so that's, this is where I think if you've never used a computer before and you just want surfing and email, this is a good choice. And the chat room says, oh, here he goes again, the cult of the iPad. Look at, there's plenty of people like Bruce. I hear him all the time who say, yeah, my wife, my father-in-law, my mom. We say, oh, this is so much better. Why didn't they come out with this before? I think it's the Mac that that Steve Jobs wanted to design. Simple, out of the way. And yet we as computer users, we say, well, what's the CPU in there? How much RAM does it have? How much storage does it have? Where's the file system? How can I copy files in and out? Those aren't things other normal people worry about. And I think that's the difference right there. We're going to take a break. Thank you for the call, Bruce. Congratulations on Magic Gig Slips. That's cool. Dave's coming up in Hollywood. He wants ebook options. We could talk about that in a second, but right now I want to talk about Carbonite.com. It's the best backup out there. You know, if you've got a computer, you've got to think about backup. And if you are going to think about backup, can I tell you two things you're looking for? Automatic, so you don't have to remember it. I'm telling you, lots of people say, oh, yeah, I'll just back it up whenever I think of it. You'll never do it. And it can't be sitting next to your computer because I hate to say this, but what if the worst happens? A fire, a flood, an earthquake, a tsunami, a tornado? You'll lose the backups. You've got to have the backup somewhere else. We call it off-site. Best place, the internet. And that's what Carbonite does. For less than $5 a month, anytime you're online, it's backing your data up. You can get it anytime with their free iPhone app, their iPad app, their BlackBerry or Android app. I want you to try it free right now for 2 weeks. Carbonite.com, offer code Leo. Get 2 months free when you buy it. Carbonite.com. Back it up to get it back. Do it right and use my name, Leo. We'll be back in a moment. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here. I'll pause that video. We were watching video in the break. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. What do geeks talk about when they're not talking tech? Coffee. Coffee. Yeah. Coffee. We're talking about the best way to make coffee. Different techniques. And we were watching this video. This is an interesting device. It's called the... MyPressi.com. MyPressi Twist. It's a little portable espresso machine. Well, I'll give it a try. Anything to drink more coffee. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-827-5536. You find that phone number and all the information about this show and every show we've done going back 775 episodes. On techguylabs.com. And you know, that's not even the whole thing. That's just all the ones that we've got records for. That only goes back to 2004. I've been doing this show since 1991. Fortunately, no recordings exist of that old show. The modern era started in 2004. That's the post-KFI, or the began with KFI era. Techguylabs.com website, phone number. Is there, chat room is there, previous shows, all the audio, show notes and everything. And thanks to James DeRuvo for writing all this stuff down. Yeah, but you can just call in. We always love getting the calls. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number to call. Dave in Hollywood. Thanks for hanging on, Dave. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
Wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. It's a beautiful sunny day here today.
I'm jealous, although the good news is I'm flying to L.A. tonight for the big E3 Gaming Expo. So it's been raining in Northern California, so I guess I'm flying to the sun. I'm so happy to hear that.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
To provide sun for the rest of the country.
It's always sunny in L.A.
That's correct. Leo, I wrote a book, an e-book, which I published on ClickBank about a year ago, and it did okay on ClickBank, and sales, I was selling it at $40, and sales began to wane a bit, so I said, I'm going to try it on Kindle. So I put it on Kindle, and I priced it at $9.99, and that seemed to work pretty good. And then I read somewhere that you can actually make more money if you price it cheaper, so I changed it to $2.99, and it's been doing pretty good. I've been making $100 or $200 a month from it. So now I'm thinking, aside from thinking that, boy, I should write more books and put them on Kindle. But I'm just wondering about, am I obligated to Kindle to only keep it on Kindle? Can I put it on Barnes and Noble? Can I put it on?
Oh, that's an interesting question. You'd have to look at the agreement. I don't think so. I mean, no, if I buy a book from Random House on Amazon, it doesn't preclude me from buying it from Barnes and Noble. So I can't imagine that they'd make that restriction.
Okay, so I should be able to get it on those other things. And
yeah, you know, the good news is Amazon Kindle uses, as you know, a format called Mobi, M-O-B-I, which is Amazon's own proprietary format. But they've already announced that they're going to move to EPUB. And that's really good news because EPUB is the standard for everybody. It's going forward, all electronically published books will be in EPUB format. And that means there'll be support for it on the Kindle, on the Barnes and Noble Nook, all of that. So you'll make one copy, one electronic copy, and then you'll be able to sell it everywhere.
Excellent, excellent.
What's your book about, Dave?
It's about the inflation. It's called How to Protect Your Money from the Coming Government Hyperinflation. And when I saw,
gee, I think that it would sell very well, especially at $1.99. You know, the people who would buy that book, I think, would be probably price sensitive.
Could be price sensitive. Certainly, when I lowered the price, I got more sales. So I'm.
That's interesting. I think that's a great data point. The nice thing about an ebook is you get more of the money. You know, if you publish that in a traditional form, you might get $1, $1.52 per copy, but now you get 70% of whatever price you set.
Well, you know, I did a book on computers 20 years ago, Leo, called The Computer Printer Primer, and I got like a $5,000 advance, but I figure if I make a couple hundred dollars a month for a couple of years, I mean, it's
right.
equal that, so.
Yeah, I've written 13 computer books, and the advance is all you'll ever see. You're lucky if you make the advance back. You know, it's just, it's people have this notion because they hear about Danielle Steele that you're going to become rich writing books. Very few people make much money. Being a book author is not a good way to make a lot of money. You do it for other reasons. Now, I think that is changing with EPUB. And the good news about electronic publishing is you control it. You own more of it. You don't have to give a chunk to the publisher. The bad news is, and this is really the challenge here, Dave, in my opinion, you've got to market it. Well, that book is not going to, I think it's less price sensitive and more marketing sensitive.
I do run on Amazon, not Amazon, Google. I run ads. So when
that's a good idea.
Inflation, hyperinflation, it sends them to Kindle. And I obviously,
if you could get on CNBC or, you know, Jim Cramer, Mad Money, you get on one show once, you'd sell 100,000 copies.
Wow.
What I would do is I would start, what you want to do is get the word out. And not just, you know, that's nice. The Google's nice because that's because people are searching for, I don't know what keywords you bought, hyperinflation maybe or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what you want to do is do the same. The publishers, look, for years, publishers did certain things to publicize a book. They do author tours. You get on the local radio. You can do that by phone. Lots of small town radio stations would love to get an author interview. You're very topical. That helps.
I think so. I mean, that's why I wrote the book anticipating what's going on now. And, you know, you can kind of get a sense.
Yeah, your timing couldn't be better.
Sure.
Send copies to, you know, people like Neil Cavuto. You know, get stuff out there and you get one booking, the thing can snowball because then everybody looks and sees who, you know, you've been on Jim. Oh, well, that's different. Let's get you on. Start with radio, build your way up. You don't need to hire a publicist. A publicist would know how to do it, but you could do it yourself. And, you know, given that you're only making $1.99, you probably should do it yourself.
Right. I have one other question. There's a service called Book Baby. I think it's a spinoff of CD Baby. And
right.
Apparently, I think they act as a middleman. You pay them like $100 and they get your book up on Barnes and Noble. And
I don't think you could try that, but I don't know if you need that. I think you can get it on yourself. You know where I would look at is a site called createspace.com. This is Amazon's self-publishing site.
Okay.
And they actually do paper books as well. Remember that in your group, there will be people who don't do ebooks.
Right, right.
Wouldn't you like to get to them? Well, you would like to do it for no cost. So these guys, it's print on demand. So you set it up. It's free. They do have paid services, including marketing services, but you set it up for free. And then people can order it through Amazon, not only on Kindle, but they can order paper. And I bet you'd sell, you know, it's going to cost $15.99 or something because you got to print it.
Right.
But I think there's people going to do that, too. So this is called createspace.com. I've mentioned Lulu in the past. That's another site, lulu.com. But CreateSpace is pretty interesting. I think I would browse around. I think all of these guys, including Amazon's own CreateSpace, can get your ebook everywhere. I don't think you need to go to BookBaby.
Okay. Great, great. I think I actually got an on-demand book. I was researching some really obscure topic, and I saw it on Kindle, and they sent it to me, and it looked like it was something they had reprinted.
Could be, although that the on-demand books can look exactly like a real book. You know, they're very high quality. You don't necessarily feel like, oh, this is something somebody printed on his laser printer.
was high quality, but it was a book from the 1890s, and they had obviously just photographed
them. Interesting. That could well be, yeah. Probably it was in the public domain way back then. Hey, Dave, good luck with your book. I think that sounds like a great topic. We'll put a link in our show notes. Maybe that'll help. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. Larry's in Woodlands, California. Hi, Larry.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling. What can I do for you today?
Well, I have a problem with where I live. I bought a new house a couple of years ago, and we don't get any cell phone service.
Ugh.
I've had to use, I have BlackBerry phones using Wi-Fi. Use DSL Extreme, and their service has been really good. And I got it, I think, because of you.
Thank you.
Sure. The problem that I have, though, using the Wi-Fi is my calls always break up. Now, on my laptop, which is through a router, that works fine. I don't have any problems with it. And I'm wondering if it's a problem with the router that I have. It's a really inexpensive router. I ran some speed tests today, doing it both plugging the DSL line directly into my desktop computer and using the router, the wireless router, with my
laptop. Let me say this right now. It's not a speed issue.
Okay.
There's plenty of speed.
Okay.
The problem is that in general, Wi-Fi is kind of inconsistent.
Okay.
It can drop the signal once in a while, and the speed fluctuates, and packets can be lost. So when you use Wi-Fi this way, a lot of people do, you know, normally when you have something like a phone call, you want what's something called QoS, quality of service. You want the phone call data to be higher priority than, let's say, an email or a website.
Right.
But the nature of networking is that there is no QoS built into it. So what happens is a phone call packet might be delayed by the fact that your computer is getting its email right now.
Okay.
And so all of a sudden you're talking, and then the computer gets its email. And
right. And the big difference, there's a thing called latency, which I don't understand.
Latency is another issue. And then latency is exactly this problem. Okay. So it's not speed. It's
at 55, and when I ran it on my desktop, it was 18. So evidently, right, when it's coming,
55 ain't bad. Yeah, 55 ain't bad, but it is higher. And so, what latency is how long? What's the delay between? It's, think of sonar. You know, when you do a sonar, you ping something, you send boo, and then it comes back boo, and you can tell, you know, with sonar, you can tell shapes by sending a lot of pings, but you can at least tell us how far something away something is by how long it took for the round trip. Latency is how long that round trip takes.
Okay.
So the longer the amount of time, the more latency. Now, think about it in a phone call. In a phone call, I speak, you speak. I speak, you speak. If there, you've seen this on CNN when they're talking via satellite, there's a lot of latency. So right, we go to our correspondent in Beirut, and what's the story? 2, 3, 4. Well, Jim, and that's latency. That's because it's going up to a satellite, coming back down. That's how long it took for her to hear Jim throw it to her. And then it has to go back up and come back down to Jim. That time can be as long as a few seconds. That's a lot of latency, and it kills phone calls.
Right. So it's not an issue of the router. There's nothing I can do, is what you're saying.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, there is something you can do. I'm just explaining what the issues are. So inconsistent dropped packets that it closes, burbling. Latency causes long delay times and makes it very difficult to have a conversation. Both of those are impacted by interference.
Okay.
Now, Wi-Fi can, if you're near the Wi-Fi router, the base station, if you're not, you know, more than, say, 50 feet away and there's not a lot of stuff in between you, you know, Wi-Fi really wants to be line of sight. Of course, it's not.
Okay.
But if it's traveling through walls, if there's metal in the wall, that can cause lots of problems. It can even block the Wi-Fi signal. So what you want to do is see how does it work when I'm standing next to the router?
Okay.
If it works fine when you're standing next to the router, well, then you kind of know the problem is as I get farther from the router, the phone's not going to work as well. Another issue, though, can be interference. It turns out that the Wi-Fi frequency is an unregulated frequency. The FCC designated that frequency as wide open. Anybody can use it, including baby monitors, cell phones, microwave ovens, and all sorts of other junk. So what we're finding is that most of the time problems with Wi-Fi occur because there's interference. There's other things using that frequency. So one thing to do to play around with is perhaps moving the Wi-Fi base station around, turning off devices to see if it fixes it. You know, if you've got a microwave oven and somebody turns on the microwave oven, that could kill your phone call. So there's a lot of things that can go wrong. Now, who's your cell phone carrier?
T-Mobile.
I don't know if T-Mobile makes a femtocell. AT&T does. A number of cell phone companies do this now. AT&T calls it a microcell.
Yeah, I used to have Sprint, and they had a little transmitter that I used.
It's designed to do this. For areas where you can't get cell signal, you use your internet access. And those actually support quality of service. Those will prioritize packets. They're just doing voice, and they'll do a better job than just your basic Wi-Fi.
Yeah, T-Mobile, I don't think, has anything like that.
Yeah.
And it seemed to work better than...
yes, because it's designed to do that. Yeah.
But I'm stuck with a contract for another year.
Yeah. Let me just see if T-Mobile does a femtocell.
Okay.
Doesn't...
Quality of the router, because I mean, I only paid about $20-$25 for this router. It's a barricade router.
You might try getting a better router. Really, a stronger radio with better antennas would certainly make a difference.
Is there something specific that I should look for?
No. The truth, it's kind of a commodity product.
That's why I bought this, and it
right. You were smart. Buy the cheapest one. You might look for one that has a larger or bigger radio. You might look at the antennas. What frequencies are the router? Is the router using? Is it a B or a G or an N router? Is it using 2.4 or is it using 5.5? Do you know? It's an N router. Okay. And does it offer you two frequencies?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay. It will offer you a chance to change channels. You might try changing channels. Within the spectrum, it's actually divided up into 11 channels, actually 12.
And when I first switched over to T-Mobile, we worked on it and we worked on it. Originally, it was on an auto setting where it would change channels, and we set it to one. I forget which one it is. And that worked better than anything else, but it's still not good.
It's as good as it can be. Well, that kind of tells me that it's interference, by the way. Changing channels means you're going away from whatever. If you have a cordless phone in there, often they use the same frequencies, 2.4 gigahertz.
Okay.
If you do have a 2.4 gigahertz phone, then you might want to get one that uses 900 megahertz or 5 gigahertz.
If I keep my desktop computer turned off, because that's always getting email and things like that, will that make a difference?
Yes, it might. Okay. The truth is it's a trial and error. You have to experiment.
Okay.
The most important thing you can do is move the base station around. Even moving it 6 inches might make a difference.
All right, I'll try that.
You just have to play with it. RF radio frequency is a black art. It's voodoo. You just have to play with it. Yeah, it doesn't look like T-Mobile is going to do a femtocell, although they say they might this year later. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866, the number 2, GetNet, to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. You'll find that on the website, techguylabs.com. I would love it if you would call me and ask me an easy question, because I'm no good with the hard ones. Kathy in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Kathy.
Hello, Leo.
I am well.
Thank you. And here's
thanks for calling.
Question.
Yes. Yes.
Have you heard, I want to get a Windows flip phone. It'll be my first smartphone. I really want the Androids, but I want them to clean up their act a little bit first.
I think you're actually making a good choice for your first smartphone. Windows phones are very nice.
Well, I'm stuck with AT&T because I live on a hilltop, and they seem to be the best as far as me being able to talk
yes.
out.
By the way,
yeah,
absolutely the right thing to do. Choose the carrier first.
Yes.
Absolutely the right thing to do. They all have good phones now.
Well, this is the little problem with it. I haven't bought it yet because I researched all the phones thoroughly, and that one did seem to come out the best, the Samsung Focus.
The Focus, yeah, that's the one I have.
Except there's one problem with it. With like 25% of the users, I found out, are having this continual beeping noise showing that their battery charger is dead, and yet it isn't. It's charged up. A few of them have had it where it even will start smoking and burning, you know, smell.
What?
Yes.
Okay, this is the problem with the internet. You can, if there's, this is both good and bad news, and what we have to do is we have to learn to filter. Any product that's made, there will be somebody who says, this thing's a piece of junk. It doesn't do X, it does Y, it's well crazy. And it's true, because when you make a million of anything,
right,
some percentage is going to be a problem. 25% is high. I could tell you from my own experience, no problems at all with the Samsung Focus. I got it the day it came out. So, you know, sometimes there's more problems with the first generation, and as they figure these out, they fix them. But I have had no problems. The thing is reliable, charges, never beeps. I've never seen smoke come out of it once.
How long have you had it?
When did it come out? Since the day they offered Windows Phone, is at least 6 months.
Oh.
It's as long as anybody on the internet's had it. I got it the day it came out.
Yeah. You know, I'm wondering, is there a way after I get it that I can tell within that first 30 days that we're going to have?
Oh, yeah. If it's going to smoke or beep, it should tell you pretty quickly. And you know what? Even if it's 30 days, if it's a year and if your phone starts smoking, you should immediately bring it in and say, this thing is smoking, and they will give you a new one. They don't want your phone to burst into flames.
There's only two of them that did that. But the rest are talking this nonstop beeping noise.
Same thing. There's no problem. You bring it in and you say the phone's broke. The truth is, think about it. AT&T makes so much more money on you every month from the cost of the phone than they do on the phone itself. They don't care about the phone.
Do you think that I'm going to be okay to get one?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's a very nicely made phone.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Everybody I talk to, they say there are no viruses on these phones, but my husband swears that you can get a virus on a cell phone.
Yeah, he's kind of right, but not on this phone.
Oh, I like hearing that.
I keep waiting because a cell phone is just a beautiful target for bad guys. But you're right. If you got an Android phone, there have been viruses on Android. There have even been some problems on iPhones, but nobody's attacking Windows phones. It's too much work.
Oh, I love that. I may end up keeping it over an Android, although some of those Androids, they're so exciting.
Oh, I agree. They're really kind of for geeks, though. They're for people who like to mess around with a phone.
Kind of geeky.
Oh, I love it.
First got a computer, and I wanted to learn 3D sculpting, and it turned out I took to it like a fish to water.
Oh, isn't that great?
I love problems.
Well, good. You might end up wanting an Android phone down the road.
I know, but I want them to grow a little. My goodness, they're putting in so many toys. They've come out with that new Thrill, and they're going to have 3D. Well, you know that's a problem waiting in the waiting. 3D this soon? too soon for it. But
no, I will. I can tell you right now, I will never buy a 3D phone.
Oh, neat.
Please.
I'm waiting for things to pan out. I figure, okay, in about 18 months, but I wanted to at least have a 50% chance that I'm not going to get that beeping problem.
I don't think so. I have. This is the first I've heard of it. But again, this is something we have to be aware of. It's a good thing. We want to know everything bad about anything. But you also have to kind of filter out, you know, let's put it this way. And somebody just in the chat room just said this. Most people who are happy with a phone are not going to say anything. They're just going to be happy with a phone. But 100% of the people whose phone beeps all the time are going to write about it.
Well, I filter these things when I read in the internet. It's when Microsoft came out and said they know about the problem and they were going to fix it in the latest update. They had a no-do update or something, and it didn't get fixed by this one user's account. She said, nope, mine's still beeping. So that's when I'm thinking, okay, if they know there's a problem, personally, I think it's Samsung's problem, but that's another story.
I'm looking at Dr. Mama sent me the link to the AT&T forums where it says the Samsung Focus continually beeps. See, the thing is, if you ask me, if that's happening, you go back to the store, get it from an AT&T store, and you say, this is ringing and ringing and ringing. What is going on?
Over the air with you saying it, then when I go into AT&T, they're not going to say they haven't heard about it because you're so popular.
Yeah.
The word's out.
Yeah, I'm looking at this forum, and there are a number of suggestions, but I have to say, I
aren't working.
Yeah, baby, keep up. So I used that with my, and I finally stopped the charging icon, and then my. It sounds like it's a bad charging mechanism or a bad battery. In either case, absolutely, they should fix it. And remember, again, this phone doesn't cost them very much.
Right.
They don't make the money on the phone. They can give you a new phone, no problem, because they want to keep your $100 a month.
Right.
That's where they make the money. So they want to keep you as a happy, happy customer.
Gee, thank you, Leo.
That's your leverage, Sarah, Kathy.
My husband says, you're not getting that phone till you talk to Leo.
I like your husband. No, I think I do recommend Windows, the new Windows phone. For people who've never used a smartphone, it's a really nice, simple introduction to smartphones. Does most of what you'd want it to do. It's easy to use. I think it's a great choice.
And it's got a good camera, doesn't it? Because
it has a nice camera.
Oh.
I'll tell you the truth. Nothing is as good as the iPhone 4. That is the best camera on the market.
But that's not with AT&T, is it?
Oh, of course it is. Yeah.
And that's the one that, see, I work in downtown L.A., and I heard that you drop calls all the time on those, because I considered one.
Yeah. I can't deny that. I can't deny that. The iPhone does tend to drop calls.
See, I did my research.
You're right. I can't deny that. The iPhone is also a very good first smartphone, but I think, yeah, try the Focus. You'll like it.
Great. Thank you, Leo.
Thanks, Kathy. Take care. I really hate it that you're stuck for 2 years, right? The problem is that if AT&T is bad in downtown L.A., which apparently it is, it's going to be bad for the Focus as well as the iPhone. It might be a little worse for the iPhone, maybe, but it's going to be bad. It really depends most on your location than it does on the phone, however, I have to say. The iPhone 4 tends to do poorly, though, in weak AT&T areas, and I know that because I'm in a weak AT&T area, and I can't make a call on my iPhone without it dropping. Within guarantee. In fact, I even tell people now when I'm talking on my iPhone, I'm going to lose you. If I do, I'll call you back. And you know it's the iPhone because you'll see that call failed warning. I mean, I guess we just got used to it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Okie dokie.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88-88. Ask Leo. That's my number. Jason is in Cooper, Texas. Our next caller. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
I've been a fan of yours all the way back from ZDTD TV days.
Thank you. Thank you. That goes back a long way now. We just, May 11th was the 13th anniversary of the launch of ZDTV. So what can I do for you today?
Yes, I had a question about I have a Roxio Easy DVD, Easy VHS to DVD. And
yes.
I installed it on my one-year-old Dell laptop.
Yes.
And is there a free program I could use to edit the files to split them into different sections?
Well, if all you want to do is split them, yeah, there are a number of free programs. What where do you get the files? What kind of files are they?
It's like MPG files.
Okay. Yeah, if you Google MPG splitter, there are a number of programs. That's actually a very easy thing to do with MPEG files. There are a number of MPEG movie splitters, including one called, oddly enough, MPG splitter. That one's $10, but there are also some free ones because it's a fairly simple thing to do. You can also do it with QuickTime Pro, which is, I think, $30. There's lots of ways to do it. If you want to edit them, though, do more than just split them up. Is that what, would you like to, for instance, take stuff out, put stuff in, reorder stuff, things like that?
Mainly just to split them into separate files.
So that they can be, they don't have to be more than 4 gigs, or they'll fit on a disk.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, just search for MPEG splitter. There are a ton of those. I've used a number of freeware programs. Windows or Mac?
For Windows.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. I'm just looking. Here's MPEG splitter. There's one called MPEG splitter. That's IM2 is a good one. IMTOO.com. They have the IM2 video splitter too. That's $20. That seems like a lot to pay just for something that'll split video, but it is it's a little bit more capable. You can, it's almost an editing program. Ultra Video Splitter, MPEG Splitter. Video Redo, David Bix in the chat room is saying he thinks that's free. Xilisoft, X-I-L-I-S-O-F-T, makes a lot of programs like this. They make a splitter. It's $20 too, which is kind of a shame. Seems like something like that should be free. I think what happens is, because it's an easy thing to do. If you have a recent version of Windows, you can certainly load it into Windows Movie Maker. In fact, the more recent version of Windows Movie Maker is actually a pretty good editor, and that's free. Maybe I should just say that. Just use that. That'll let you edit it, split it, do all sorts of things. If you're using Windows 7, you don't have it, but you can get it from get.live.com. The truth is, though, the simplest thing would be just to get something that chops them up. MPEG files, the MPEG video format is what we call frame-based. So it's actually pretty simple to say, okay, right there, right in between those two frames, just split it in two. Coming up in just a second, we're going to go to Canada, Calgary. Richard's on the line, and he wants some tablet advice. I can give you some. I've used them all now. Before we do that, though, I want to give you some backup advice. You know about me and Carbonite. We go back a long ways. In fact, when Abby went to college, she's a freshman. First thing I did when I gave her, give her the laptop for college, right? And I didn't even ask her. I just put Carbonite on there. See, here's the thing. In fact, Carbonite was invented by David Friend. He's the CEO for his college-bound daughter who, well, it was actually her second year. In year one, she lost her thesis. She wrote a paper and she called, Daddy, what do you do? And he said, there's got to be a better backup solution. So he created Carbonite. But Carbonite, whenever your laptop or computer is online, is backing up. And it's backing up to the internet. So even if you lose the computer or even lose your backups, you've always got a good, safe copy up there in the cloud. And you can get to it any time. You don't have to wait for the worst to happen. You just log on to your Carbonite account with any computer. Go to the library, log on there. Use an iPhone and a BlackBerry, an Android phone, log on there, and there's your file. It's always ready, always available. It's just great. Try it free for 15 days. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo. If you decide to buy, use my name Leo again. You'll get 2 months for the price of 12. 2 months free. 14 months for the price of 12. Wouldn't be a good deal if you got 2 months for the price of 12. 14 months for the price of 12. That's 2 free months. And by the way, Carbonite, they just hired 250 people in Lewiston, Maine. They've moved their tech support out of India to the U.S. I love them for that. Thank you, Carbonite. And that, of course, means you're going to get great support from them if you need it. Carbonite.com. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right with Carbonite. And now Richard in Calgary. Hey, Richard, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Richard, welcome.
Well, how are you doing today, Leo?
I am well. How are you?
Well, it's finally sunshine here. No more snow.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness is right.
You get a long winter in Alberta, don't you?
We sure do. This year was down.
Oof. And when I say winter, I mean winter. It's cold.
Well, it's not as cold as where I'm originally from, but...
Where was that?
I actually grew up in a place called Thompson, Manitoba. Where
okay.
10 months of winter and 2 months of something in between.
Oh, so you're a snowbird.
Yeah, pretty much.
What can I do for you?
Well, I decided to go back to school at the ripe old age of 46 this year to get all my certifications finally.
Good man. That's great.
Now I'm at a kind of a crossroads. I currently have a netbook, and it's not quite working for me anymore as far as being able to use more current software. It only runs XP. It won't run Windows 7 worth a darn. And what I'm looking at is a solution for being able to put my textbooks on, because they're all e-books, which are all...
Oh, that's good.
And I'm also looking for a solution that will allow me to use it in the field after I'm finished getting all my certs. And my choices right now are between the iPad and the Asus Slate.
So, and the Slate, is that the Windows 7 one or is that an Android tablet?
Yeah.
It's Windows 7.
Yeah.
Well, certainly it'd be more capable. I don't think Windows 7 is a very good tablet operating system. It has touch, but you need a stylus, I imagine, on that Slate.
You can use your finger from what I've seen.
You can use your finger. Okay. I mean, I'm a fan of the iPad. I would also look at the Samsung Galaxy Tab 10-1, which comes out tomorrow. Okay. That's Android-based. The thing about the iPad, we were talking about this earlier, that might disappoint somebody who is more computer-focused is the lack of a file system and a way to browse it. And you might find that a little frustrating. It certainly be great for reading the textbooks. What do you want to do, though, after school with it?
Well, I'd like to be able to use it in the field like I use a netbook now for doing diagnostics.
That's the problem. You won't be able to.
Right.
You need Windows. I would guess those diagnostics all run on Windows, right? Yeah, you're gonna get the Windows 7 based tablet. It won't be as good in terms of pure tablet experience.
Okay.
But it'll be adequate, and it will be Windows. And I think that you need that if you're going to run those programs.
Right. Right.
Are the certs Microsoft certs?
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty clear. Then going to be getting.
Well.
Yeah, you're going to be getting the Acer.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't tried things about it, but unlike Windows 8, really, so it's to me, if I had the choice, and now this may be too pricey for you, but I would look at a convertible, that is a laptop that converts into a tablet. My current favorite is the Lenovo X220. It's thin, it's light, it's much more expensive, so it may not be it. Yeah.
Okay.
May not be an option for you. However, I think Lenovo's done an amazing job with this, and it's convertible. So you fold the screen down, it folds flat, and then it really is like a tablet. It's not an iPad, but it'll be similar to the Acer. And then if you need the keyboard, which sometimes you do, writing papers and stuff, you'll have that capability as well. I think it's a nice compromise.
See, the nice thing about the Slate is it comes with a wireless Bluetooth keyboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's close. I think the Slate's probably a good choice. I tell you what, get it and then call us and let us know. You want to be our guinea pig, Richard? Okay. Hey, thank you for the call. Good luck with your studies. That's fantastic. All the best. Enjoy the brief summer headed your way in Alberta. Leo LaPointe, the tech guy. We're going to take a break for your local news. We'll be back with another hour. Stay here. Well, a good day to you, Leo LaPointe here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk about computers and the internet and all the cool stuff happening online and off. Cell phones, home theater. If you want to join the conversation, my phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO. And I'd sure love it if you'd give me a ring. Tomorrow, actually tonight, I'm flying to Los Angeles for the E3 conference. It starts tomorrow. E3 is the big gaming conference. It's funny. I like to play games. I got started in technology by gaming, but it was so long ago. I don't know if you'd call me a gamer. Started with the Atari 2600, the Atari, then, it went from there. Atari 400 and 800 back in the late 70s. But I think it's a good way to get into computing because at least you think of it as a fun thing, not just, work. Related, but it is always fun to go to E3. It's such a glitzy conference. All the game manufacturers show off their wares, and of course Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo will be there. Tomorrow, Microsoft and Sony kick things off with their press conferences. I don't think, last year Microsoft announced the Kinect, and that was a big deal. That's the device that lets you dance in front of the Xbox 360 to play games. Sony announced the Move, kind of a big deal. This year, I don't think Microsoft is going to have much to say. They'll show some new games and blah, blah, blah. Sony's going to have nothing to do but apologize for their abysmal security on the PlayStation Network. They keep getting hacked. I don't think they'll have much to say. The big press conference is Tuesday morning. Nintendo, they've already said, we're going to announce the next Wii. The Wii is the oldest of the big three gaming machines and is due for an update. It's not high def. It's the only one that's not high def. So I imagine this will be a pretty interesting announcement. And then, of course, 12 noon Pacific time on Tuesday, the show floor opens, and that's always a lot of fun. So I'm going to be there. We'll cover it on our Netcast network, not on the radio show, but I'll talk about it next week, of course. So that's one story. Tomorrow, Monday, another big story. Right about the same time Microsoft's having its non-event, Apple's going to be having a significant event. The Worldwide Developers Conference kicks off. This is the one keynote a year from Apple that they do now. And they've already sent out a press release saying Steve Jobs will be there. And they've even said what they're going to talk about. At least we know they'll be talking about the next generation of desktop operating systems, the OS X Lion. They'll also talk about iOS 5, the next generation of the iPhone and iPad operating system. And they will explain what iCloud is. They say, yes, we have a new thing. We're calling it iCloud. And we can speculate what that is, but we'll find out tomorrow morning. That'll be interesting. What other news is there? Well, this week, of course, Microsoft took the lid off Windows 8, which will be available sometime in 2012, probably around a year from now. And interesting, not a surprise, but interesting, very tablet-like. Even on the desktop, you'll be able to touch the screen, slide things around, lots of tiles. I'm wondering if they're a little misguided. We'll see. Apple is not going to do that with Lion. They will have some tablet-like features, including a full-screen interface for applications, but they're not doing the tiles. Microsoft's really making Windows 8 look a little bit like Windows Phone. And this is the difficulty for Microsoft. They can't really leave Windows behind. I mean, if you're using Microsoft Office, if you're using Excel, you still need Windows. You need a start menu. You need menus on the on the windows. You need tiling. You need all of that stuff. So Microsoft says, yeah, you'll still get Windows under the hood, but the top will be this slidey tablet thing. Somehow that doesn't satisfy. It almost feels like they're jumping on a bandwagon. Hey, the iPad's hot. Let's add that to Windows 8. I just have a hard time getting too excited about that. It feels like a mistake. It really does. Get ready, because Groupon is going to go public. And now it's interesting. I'm hearing a lot of people saying, don't buy this one. I don't recommend or talk about stocks. I don't do stock picking. I don't, for editorial reasons, I don't even buy tech stocks. So I'm not the guy to ask about this. Groupon is that company that's the fastest growing company in history. I mean, just amazing. Their quarterly revenue, January, February, March of 2011, revenue, $644 million. That's in 3 months. Their revenue last year, just a little more, $713 million. For a year, their revenue in 2009, the first year they were around, $30 million. They're growing like crazy. The fastest growing company in history. But wait a minute, there's more. There's more. Before you run out and buy Groupon stock, which you'll, I guess, be able to do soon, they just filed, you should know that on that $644 million of revenue, they lost over $100 million. Lost. Last year, on their $713 million of revenue last year, they lost $389 million. That doesn't mean they made money. That means they lost all the money, all the revenue, plus $398 million. In fact, in their filing, because you know you have to file this thing called an S-1 before you can go public, let the stock market know what your business is. In the S-1, they said, quote, they expect their operating expenses will increase substantially in the foreseeable future as we continue to invest to increase our subscriber base, increase the number and variety of deals we offer every day, expand our marketing channels, expand our operations, hire more employees, develop our technology platform. They've got 7,000 employees, from zero to 7,000 in 3 years. And it kind of makes sense, because what is Groupon? Well, essentially, it's online coupons, local online coupons. So you join Groupon, every day you get a deal of the day, and it's something in your area. Well, for them to grow, they need to have salespeople in every area. That's why they have so many employees. They have salespeople everywhere. Now, people point out, well, Amazon, when it offered its stock, public stock, first public stock, was losing money too, because they were doing the same thing. They were growing like crazy, spending every penny that they could raise to build distribution centers, to build infrastructure. Well, that's done now, and now Amazon's very profitable. If you had bought Amazon stock, when it was at $19.99, you would be very happy today. So some people say, well, don't worry about Groupon losing money. They'll be profitable. They're just building. On the other hand, many people say this is not a... In fact, I'm seeing a lot of articles in the trade press and the financial media saying, I don't know how good a deal this is. I don't know. They have 83 million subscribers. That's up from 2 years ago, 152,000. That's a big growth. 7,000 employees, about half of them local salespeople. You know, at one point, Google was considering buying Groupon for $6 billion. Everybody was shocked by that. Groupon just got another infusion of capital from the venture capital companies that would value them at around, well, if the IPO goes off at the price they expect it to be, value them at about $20 billion. Can a company that loses a third of $1 billion in a year be worth $20 billion? Only in technology, my friends. Only in technology, because things move so fast in technology, it almost makes sense to spend a ton of money right now, build it up, get to critical mass as quick as you can, lose money, it's fine, because someday you'll make money. It's times like this that I'm glad that I don't buy tech stock. I don't know what I would say. We'll watch with great interest It kind of feels like 1999 all over again. The tech bubble's back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your call's next. 888-ASK-LEO. Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, my goodness. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. Addy is on the line from London, England. Addy, welcome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey. Hello, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm all right.
What can I do for you?
Here's the thing. I have decided to make the switch from my Windows PC to a Mac. You was that's next.
And the angels wept. At least the ones in Redmond wept. The people in Cupertino are cheering right now. Isn't it funny what a momentous thing that is? But I guess it is in your life. I mean, it is somewhat of a change.
Yeah, it's because it kind of reminds me of when I had a PC way back in like the early 90s running Windows 3.11. Oh my God, those were the days.
Not in a good way. It was nice though. You could always drop into DOS. Yeah. I did enjoy that. I'm a command line guy, I've discovered. Maybe it's because I'm an old guy, but one of the reasons I use a Mac is because you've got this Unix command line available to you. And every once in a while, you just want to drop into that and fire up a bash script, and whoo, it feels good.
True.
So what can I do to help you in this momentous transition?
Well, I'm just trying to, like, it's really enough already. Sorry for my language.
That's all right. I didn't hear it because, fortunately, Skype broke up. No, try to. Here in the States, we have all sorts of rules about the language. I'm sure you didn't say anything bad, but what can I do to help you?
Well, what I want to do is I've heard about this little doohickey called Time Machine on the Mac, and I want to set that up in such a way so that it sends the backup to the Time Machine backup to my Windows box.
Nope.
So
can't do it.
Way to do that.
Can't do it. One of the things you're going to discover as a Windows user, you're used to a lot more flexibility. It's really almost a philosophy. If there's a big difference between Windows and Mac, it is the philosophy that Apple came up with really very early on, back in 1984, with their human interface guidelines, really at the very beginning. And Apple, it's a philosophy of user interface design that says there should be exactly one way to do something. They call it, believe it or not, monotony. That there should be one way to close a window. It's actually not true anymore. We've kind of drifted away from that. But in the early days of the Mac, there should be one way to run a program. There should be one way to do everything. Reason being, humans learn pathways in their brain of how to do something. And you don't want to confuse them by giving multiple pathways. You want to have, this is how you do it. And they can learn it that way faster. And so it'll be easier to use. That's what it was all about in the early days. Unfortunately, monotony as a concept has kind of died on the Mac. You can close a window by clicking in the close box or by doing controlled or command W just as you can on Windows. They've been very influenced by Windows. And so we've lost the benefit of monotony without losing the kind of tyrannical attitude that we know best, our way or the highway. We kept the bad part of this philosophy and lost the good part. So if there is a difference now between Windows and Macintosh, it is that Apple really feels it knows what's best for you. Apple really feels its way is the best way. And if you want to do something different, well, sorry, you should buy something else. Steve Jobs even said that. He said, you have a choice. When he's talking about iOS, he's talking about the iPhone. He said, you have a choice. You don't have to buy it. That's your choice. But if you buy our product, you're going to use it our way. Time Machine is a very good example of this. Time Machine is easy to use. It's a backup solution that people find simple. It's designed for mom and dad and grandma and grandpa and people who aren't, you know, computer geeks. So it does what it says it's going to do. It does it in a beautiful way and very straightforward way, but it doesn't have a lot of flexibility. Now, the good news is it doesn't matter because on the Mac, there are other backup solutions. Just don't expect to be able to bend Time Machine to your will. Things like backing up to something besides a time capsule or an external hard drive will forget it. That ain't going to happen. You can't back it up to a network drive. However, there are plenty of programs you can back up that let you back up to external drives. You can always use a command line, as Elpon is saying in our chat room, then do rsync. That's a Unix utility. More likely, you'll use something like SuperDuper or ChronoSync. These are two shareware or third-party programs available on the app on the Mac that let you back up to arbitrary external drives, even network drives. I do this all the time on all of my Macs. I have a program called ChronoSync I really like. It's running on all my Macs, and it backs up critical data to a network drive. It's actually network-attached storage, but it could be a Windows machine with a drive as long as it's visible on the network. And it does that on a schedule. It does it periodically, and it's nice because I have a central backup. All the music's backed up there. All the videos are backed up there. And I did that for one reason, because I had bought a lot of music, and my kids decided to buy it again. I was wasting a lot of money on iTunes buying two or three copies of the same record. So I finally said, hey, kids, all the music's on the central server. Look there first. Look at that first. So I think what you're going to see, Addy, is that you can't come to Macintosh with your Windows mindset. Windows, you know, there's 20 ways to do everything. There's always a workaround. There's always a way to modify it. Windows really is designed for people who like to do that. Apple's philosophy from day one was to make a computer, remember the ad slogan, for the rest of us. And so as a result, they don't offer the same kind of flexibility. You know, you can't change the font in the menu bar. You can't, you know, there are just limits to what you can do. I personally never use Time Machine for that reason. It's just too inflexible. It's a great solution for people who don't know anything about backup, but it's just too inflexible. So what will happen initially is you're going to be a little frustrated. You're going to say, well, wait a minute. I want to do this. I want to do that. Why can't I do that? But what you'll learn in time is what most geeky Mac users have learned, is that there are ways and ways, and you can get around it. It's just that the stuff that Apple exposes to the end user is very kind of narrow, and that's intentional. That's intentional. If you look around, if you look at the geek community, mostly they own Macs. A lot of people own Macs. So don't feel like it's not going to suit your needs, because it is Unix. It is absolutely geeky. Alex Santos says in the chat room, I just don't think you know how to use Time Machine, so you brush it aside. I disagree with you. It's very flexible and works great. Well, it was designed for you, Alex. It was designed for somebody who buys an external hard drive, plugs it in, says Time Machine, do it. Wait till you have a crash, then you talk to me, Alex. Wait till you need to restore from Time Machine, then you talk to me. I know a lot about Time Machine. I wouldn't use it. That's just my advice. And Addy, I think you should stick with a third-party program. SuperDuper is free and excellent. Every Mac user should have SuperDuper. And I find ChronoSync really excellent. It uses rsync. It's basically an rsync front end. And rsync is the king of backup utilities. Hey, it's great to hear you're listening in the UK. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. You can Skype to us from anywhere in the world. Just use Skype out to 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask. Leo's the phone number. Marcel in San Mateo, California. Hi, Marcel.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you today? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have an Evo 4G telephone that was just updated 2 days ago to Gingerbread.
Yay.
I don't know about that. I have two major problems now.
Uh-oh. You know, I had a call yesterday with somebody who updated the Droid X to Gingerbread and had a problem. What's going on?
Two things. One is the signal dropped like crazy. Wherever I had 5 bars, like in my house, now it's 3 bars. Wherever I have 4, 3, or 2, now I have no bars. You're familiar with the San Mateo?
Yeah. Yeah.
I had no signal all the way across San Mateo Bridge all the way to 880. Today, half the bridge has no signal. And the other problem is, I like to do texting with voice. I have speech to text, which makes it a lot easier.
That's one of the reasons I love Android.
Correct. And it's excellent. The other one I like is if you press a little a button on the bottom right of the phone to search something, you can do it by voice.
Right.
Well, what I notice now is if a car is moving, the microphone will not work at all. And if I stop at a stoplight, it works.
What kind of car do you have?
It's a Prius.
Yeah, I think this is actually a known problem.
But I've never had a phone before. It just started now that I updated.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make sense. I would say if I'm driving, you want the speech to text, not the keyboard.
Well, I agree. Unfortunately, this is the side effect of having phones that are basically computers. In the past with a feature phone, you really didn't get a big upgrade like that, did you? You remember how many problems people have had with operating system upgrades in the past? Guess what? That's what you just got, an operating system upgrade. Unfortunately, instead of being your desktop, it's your phone. Now, I've just been scanning through, searching for issues with the Evo Gingerbread update, and I haven't seen a lot of people complaining. Now, inevitably, when you do an operating system upgrade, you're going to have problems. It's certainly not supposed to reduce your call quality. It's not supposed to cause your phone to work less well. On the Sprint forums, there are people reporting minor issues, maybe notification errors. Netflix did stop working, but they're going to update the Netflix. I don't see anybody complaining about the issues that you're having. So I'm going to tell you to do the same thing as I told the guy yesterday. If an operating system upgrade to your phone breaks the phone, which this is done, you can't go back, unfortunately. I really wish you could. You can't go backwards, but you can at least kind of reboot the phone, restart the phone by erasing all your data and starting over. Now, make sure, you've presumably synced recently and so forth. It could be that, in fact, I always suspect that the issue, especially with Android, is a third-party application that doesn't work with Gingerbread, the newest version. That's always my first suspicion because, unfortunately, with the quality of Android apps varies wildly, and there are Android apps that cause problems. I know that. And if you could figure out which one it does, everything might get better. You wouldn't think it'd affect the number of bars you'd get or the ability to dictate, but it could be. So what I think you probably want to do is restore your phone, erase all the data, restore your phone, start it over again, see how it works without anything installed, without any apps installed. If it seems to improve it, well, then maybe there's an app that you put on there that's causing the problem. If it doesn't, I'd just bring it back to the Sprint store and say, hey, what happened? Bill in Michigan is saying maybe there's a relationship between the number of the bars and the fact that you can't do voice recognition when the car is moving. Yeah, I wonder. I mean, both of those things really are kind of hardware modifications that can occur with an operating system upgrade. They can rewrite the baseband software, the radio software in the phone, and by doing so could cause these problems. I just don't see that on a widespread basis online. I don't see hundreds of people saying, I'm getting 3 bars when I used to get 4. I can't dictate anymore. So I have to think it's mostly a problem with your phone, or entirely a problem with your phone. And maybe that it was just a bad upgrade, or maybe there's some software on your phone that interacts poorly with the new upgrade. So what I would do is start over, erase the phone, and, you know, get the update. You want 233 or 234. I'm not sure which version you got pushed, but you want the latest version. I guess it's 233. Then bit by bit reinstall the applications. And I would talk to Sprint, too. I would talk to Sprint. Otherwise, Marcel, I'm afraid I don't have much more specific solutions for you. This is the first I've heard of this. Kate in North Hollywood, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Kate.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you so much for calling.
I'm fairly computer illiterate, sorry. About 90% of your show is over my head, but you've also upgraded my knowledge about 1,000%. So thank you. I really enjoy listening to your show.
Thank you. Yeah, I think the idea is if you listen by osmosis, you'll turn into a geek.
Well, I don't know.
It's like listening to French. After a while, you start to understand it.
Yeah, you pick up on it a little bit here and there. I have a little baby laptop that somebody gave me, and I've been listening to you and KFI on KFI.
Excellent.
And it just goes out. I mean, it just goes out. It's not, and I have a poor signal already, so that I understand if I'm not on the internet. But it's an odd thing because I can start it up and everything's fine, and then all of a sudden, it could be 30 minutes into listening, or it could be 5 seconds into listening. It just stops, and if it stops for just a few seconds, starts up again wherever it stopped, in the middle of a word,
right,
phrase.
So what's going on there? Is it something called? Yeah, what's going on there is something called buffering. It might even say I'm buffering.
No, it doesn't tell me it's buffering.
Yeah, well, that's what it's doing. So here's what happens with streaming media. Unfortunately, internet access, especially wireless internet access, is inconsistent. The speed goes up and down. Sometimes packets lose their way floating through the air. And in order for the radio station to play back, it's got to get every packet in order, right? So if you think about what I'm saying right now, the audio of this radio show, it's chunked up into small packets of data and then sent out over the internet, then through the Wi-Fi to your computer, where those chunks are reassembled. The chunks need to arrive in a timely fashion and in order. If a chunk arrives out of order or a chunk is missing, the player has to stop and wait. So what players do to kind of eliminate kind of artifacts, weird sounds, or even just a lot of pauses is they buffer. They get ahead by, let's say, 30 seconds. So you'll notice when you start listening to the radio, it doesn't play right away, does it?
Right.
It takes about 30 seconds, and then it starts playing. What it's doing is it's collecting data ahead. So okay. Now if you've got 30 seconds worth of buffer and a packet's missing, you can continue to play for 30 seconds because that packet didn't show up missing until 30 seconds in the future. And then when you get to that packet, if it's still not there, then you have to stop. So that's what's happening, is that what buffering is a way of kind of handling it. It's rebuffering because it's used up its buffer. What that tells me is that either your signal is weak or it's dropping out and you're losing it. It's just a symptom of a poor signal. It's not something KFI is doing. It's not something your computer is doing. It's just a symptom of a poor signal. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is it. This is the end. Luis Oliveira will be leaving us after this next segment. He's a nice guy. Going back to school, finished his degree in mechanical engineering. Luis has been with us for the last couple of years, running the board, playing the songs, talking in my ear. Louisa, we're going to miss you, but I'm very proud of you. You're doing great. Keep up the good work. Yeah, nice guy, Luis. Really, really enjoy having him, working with him. It's been fun. He has visited the cottage. He's been up here. He's seen the lovely Twit Cottage. And I hope, Luis, you'll come visit the new Twit Studios, the new Brick Twit House, as we complete that. Let's see. What else? Oh, I am doing on Thursday a seminar, a free seminar on the future of work. And I just want to give a little plug for it because my friends at Citrix are putting it together. If you go to gotomeeting.com/economy, you can sign up for it. You do need to sign up for it ahead of time. It's not GoToMeeting. It's GoToAssist.com, isn't it? GoToAssist. Let me get it right. GoToAssist, GOTOAssist.com/economy. And we're going to have apologies. There's an error on the website. It says Tuesday, June 9th. It's Thursday, June 9th. 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, and we'll be using their fabulous GoToWebinar product, and you can join us for a little talk that I've given before on how work is changing in the new economy. I think it's pretty good, if I do say so myself. GoToAssist.com/economy, and despite the website, it is Thursday, June 9th, not Tuesday, at 10 a.m. Pacific time. Back to the phones we go. Donald in Carpinteria. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. This is Donald from Otaku No Podcast. Remember me?
Oh, I got to talk to you again.
Yeah. I have a question about media, streaming media boxes. I mean, I see a lot of these, like WDTV, the Popcorn Hour. I'm interested in getting one, but I have some rather specific needs, and I can't tell which boxes, if any, support them.
You have needs. Well, let's see. What is it that you need?
First of all, it has to be Wi-Fi either built in or as an option, because I really don't feel like stringing cable all over the house.
Okay.
Support, you know, fairly wide variety of formats, H.264, you know, Xvid, and in particular, Matryoshka containers, MKVs. And the one, preferably multiple audio, you know, be able to select from different audio tracks, because a lot of my files have like both English and Japanese audio. One that is really kind of...
You have a lot of needs.
And this is for like the anime that I watch.
Right. You know, I'm not sure. I'll give you what I think would do it, but I'll tell you the best way to do. My friend Veronica Belmont, who is the host of a great internet show called Techzilla, TechZilla.com, has put together, with the help of her fans, a fantastic spreadsheet on Google spreadsheet that talks about all the different set-top boxes and their capabilities.
Wow.
Now there's the first tab on this is a shortened version, a small version. But then if you go to the bottom of the spreadsheet and click old version, you'll see that they have reviewed pretty much every set-top box in existence as to the features, including the video codecs, because you need MKV, things like that. So it's a short URL is bit.ly/set top, one word, S-E-T-T-O-P. And that will give you a whole list of features. And this is the way to do this is kind of crowdsourcing, and that's what she's done. So she's got a lot of people working on this, and I think she's just done a fantastic job. So that's where I'll send you. I think it's, in all likelihood, the box you want is probably the Boxy box. Because that has a heritage of kind of open, you know, it's basically a hardware version of the Boxy software, which is in itself a port of XBMC, which is in itself a port of the Xbox Media Center software. But it's gone through so many hands now. It's open source, and it really has an amazing range of support for a lot of formats. It does, in fact, support an external hard drive, which sounds like you need, via USB. And it supports a lot of formats on that hard drive. So that'd be my guess, but I think you should go to Veronica's spreadsheet and check.
Actually, I'm streaming most of my stuff. I have a Drobo FS on the network that has all my...
Perfect, yeah. So, and Boxy does have Wi-Fi. The MKV is hard because MKV, the Matryoshka file format, which is widely used on the internet, unfortunately is a very CPU-intensive wrapper. It's actually inside. I think it's a standard MPEG-4 H.264, but the wrapper for some reason seems to require a lot of CPU. And so a lot of these little devices, the way they keep the price down is by putting very slow processors in there. So it is challenging to play that back, to say the least.
Does the BoxyBox support subtitles? Because that's the other thing that's kind of killing me here. A lot of anime has subtitles distributed the format.
Right.
Key.
I don't know. You'll have to check this spreadsheet because, I mean, there's features galore.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Enjoy and good luck with the Otaku no podcast. What's the URL for that?
Otaku no podcast, OTAKUNO podcast.com. We just got back from the anime convention, AnimeCon, and I'll be putting up the pictures and the interviews and our con reports shortly.
Everybody who loves anime or manga, is it manga too?
Yes, we're starting to branch out into that as well.
Good. Should know about the Otaku no podcast.com. Good luck, Donald. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It's an interesting area, actually, these boxes that you attach. I'll talk a little bit more about it in a moment, see if we can get another call in, too. Before I do, though, I do want to remind everybody how important it is to have a good antivirus. And if you're running bareback, as it were, may I recommend Nod32? In fact, even if you're using that antivirus that came with your system, it's not the best. If you're using a free one, it's not the best. The best is Nod32 from ESET. And let me tell you, what is it, $40 a year? It's well worth it to keep your system clean. Lightweight, doesn't slow you down. Very effective. They haven't missed a virus in the wild in 10 years, according to the independent and very prestigious virus bulletin. They just get the job done. By the way, Nod32 for Windows has its sister program, also from the great folks at ESET, Cybersecurity for the Mac, now on the Macintosh. Highly recommended. 866-935-ESET. Mention Leo or visit the website for a free 30-day trial. ESET.com/LEO. And don't forget to like ESET USA on Facebook to stay looped in on contests and special offers and all sorts of exclusive content, too. If you use Windows or Mac, you need the best. You need ESET, Nod32 for Windows, cybersecurity for the Mac. ESET.com/Leo. Hey, Super PC, how you doing?
Hey, Leo, it's me, Super PC from FancyShowTech.tv.
Everybody's got to get in a plug. Fancy Show, I'll give you one. FancyShowTech.tv. It's a video podcast for geeks.
And also a tech blog post. Anyways, Leo, I don't know what this call's about, but you should visit there. My question is about a hard drive. I know you have a caller earlier who uses Mac, but my question's a little different. It's not about backing up, even though this solution should hopefully do this as well. I want to share a hard drive with my whole family, and my family has Windows and Mac computers in the household we're in. I have a Mac, and someone has a Windows, and someone else has a Mac. And I need to share a few files on the network with everyone. How would I go about doing that? Are there any recommended solutions?
Yeah, I presume you already have a wireless network throughout the house, yeah?
I have a wireless network. Thank you.
Yes, I could tell you do because Skype is dying on me. What you need is network-attached storage. So, and this is exactly, I was mentioning earlier that this is what I do with my family. I have a centralized hard drive that everybody can see and back up to. It shows up as a network share, and that's called a NAS, or network attached storage. Lots of companies make them. The one that I really like for home users, very easy, is from a company called Synology, Synology. But a lot of companies make these. It will hook up to your router via a wire. And the disk station is a good one. It's quiet. It doesn't use a lot of power. It's RAID, so you can put multiple drives in there. And also it's big for that reason, redundant and big. And once you plug it into your network, it's visible on Macs or PCs. All network-attached storage solutions are cross-platform. I mean, that if they weren't, they wouldn't be that useful. So almost all of them will work fine on Macs or PCs. It's really more a question of what features they have. But I like the Synology. I'd give them a plug for sure. S Y N Sonology, Synology.com. But lots of companies make these. Hey, thanks, Supers PC. Hang on, because I'm going to keep taking calls. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Geek Week.